Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you so much for being with us, because otherwise we'd be sitting here by ourselves talking to ourselves. The whole reason for doing this, obviously, is that you're out there, and wherever you are and whenever you are, I'm so happy that you're listening. My guest tonight is Catherine Samuelson, who is a friend. She only lives a couple hours from here. We get together for lunch sometimes. And she's been on the show several times. And we're going to talk about what it's like to be psychic, which would be a whole lot of fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And we're moving into another week of holidays for the major Western religions. And one of the things that people don't realize is how, many people don't realize, is how Passover and Easter are connected. You know, Jesus was Jewish. His followers were Jewish. And the Last Supper was the Seder for the Passover. It's been done for thousands and thousands of years. And the Seder is the retelling of the miraculous story of the Exodus from Egypt. The Jews had been enslaved by Pharaoh, and through a series of wondrous miracles, they escape. And it's the story of that whole process and how they get to the land of Israel. And it's a fascinating ritual. It's a meal with readings and special symbolic foods and all kinds of fascinating stuff. It's actually very cool, and it's a lot of fun for kids. But there is an element about it that always struck me as being the core teaching, and something that we all can learn from. And that is, at more than one point, the people in the room say, "I do this because of what the Lord our God did for me when I was a slave in Egypt." The whole thing is done in the first person. The whole point to it is to accept that you were a slave, and that through miracles and the support of divinity, you no longer are. And both to understand that and how it happened, but also to look at your own life and how you are enslaved in the many ways that we all are limited in our lives, and how to work your way out of it. It's incredibly powerful to say those kinds of things in the first person and make it very, very personal. So if you're Jewish, have a wonderful time with the Seder and Passover. It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday and family time. And for those of you that celebrate Easter, maybe I gave you something else to think about, because the two are intimately connected, because the Last Supper, that whole scenario that unfolds that night, is a Seder. Jesus was the head of his household, and he was at the head of the table carrying out a ceremony which at that point had already been done every year in exactly the same way for thousands of years. It's really, really fascinating when you think of it that way. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing, and going from one kind of divine to not quite mundane, let's hang out with my dear friend Catherine Samuelson. How you doing tonight?
I'm good, David. You would think that they being so intimately connected because of when they happened at the same time, 2,000 mm-hmm. years ago, that Easter would always be when Passover is. But that's not true. It's not always. And the way I looked this up just now on the internet, and it says in 325 current era, the Council of Nicaea established that Easter would be held on the first Sunday after the first full moon, occurring on or after the vernal equinox.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they couldn't allow themselves to look at the Jewish calendar now, could they? So there's a real variance between often, and so sometimes Easter's in March, and sometimes it's in April.
Right, right.
And sometimes Passover and Easter coincide, and sometimes
it's not the first day of Passover when the first and second day of the week-long celebration is when the Seders are done. But Easter Sunday is in the week of Passover. So they're pretty close this time.
But you would think that Easter Sunday would always be after the Friday Seder of Passover.
You'd think? But, of course, they had to mess with it.
And it's also, so interesting that it's based on the lunar, which is the feminine.
Right. It's all based on the lunar calendar. And I don't think at that point that the Romans had worked out the solar calendar yet. But I don't know at what point that transition occurred.
Who knows? That's not something I've retained in my brain. And then there's the whole thing of the modern calendar, which was, I think, the Gregorian before the Julian or the Julian before the Gregorian, but whichever one came first, there was no year zero.
Right.
And miscalculated when Jesus was born.
when you actually look back at all this stuff and try and figure it out, it becomes a bigger and bigger question mark. Like, we're doing what? Why exactly?
Anyway. And when did it become that you eat a piece of bread and it transforms into a piece of Jesus' body? Huh?
Right. Right. I have a dear friend who's a Catholic bishop, and we have a great time with that. We kick things around all the time, which is one of the reasons that it's so much fun to have her in my life. Anyway, before we start answering the question, what's it like to be psychic? Who knows how we're going to answer that? Why don't you give folks an idea of your life story, your journey, and how you wound up doing psychic work?
Because I know it starts out in a place that nobody expects it to. I'll try to give a slightly different version and a short version so it doesn't take up the whole hour, but I grew up in central Illinois, raised a Methodist, became a lawyer, and at some point started, I think I was always a spiritual seeker, and at some point started exploring the psychic, got information to led me to do automatic writing. I moved from Illinois to Massachusetts, couldn't get a job, and so I got certified as a life coach, and had been using the automatic writing and using it, decided, what the heck, I'll do that as part of my living. Then I was given information that led to the creation of my book, and then decided I liked living in Vermont a heck of a lot more than the Boston area. So mm-hmm. That is a very short version.
Well, the part that you kind of skipped over quickly and slurred was the part where you were a lawyer, which always cracks
working for government.
Always cracks me up. It's like, you started where?
Well, I had a self-designed liberal arts major, and when I was a junior in the midst of finishing the self-designed liberal arts major, say that fast three times, I realized I would not be able to make a living at it.
Right.
With this degree, and I thought, well, my dad was a doctor, and he would probably have loved any of the three of his daughters to become a doctor, but I was crap at math, so that kind of left that out, and I'd followed my two older sisters through school, so I really didn't want to do what either of them were doing, and I wasn't good enough in German to become a German scholar anyway. So I kind of ticked things off and went, oh, law school, no math.
Yeah,
that's sort of basically the process.
I was supposed to be an engineer, and calculus was my downfall.
Yeah.
8 a.m. calculus class, freshman year, and I had a two-hour subway commute every morning.
Ew. Which means you had to be on the road by 5:30.
That's right. And I wasn't that good or that interested in anything other than geometry and trigonometry, really. So calculus was, it doomed my engineering career, but so be it. It was much more interesting this way.
Mm-hmm. I can say honestly that when I started exploring the psychic, I was still working for the small little local government known as Cook County, Illinois, of 20,000 employees. I did not tell many people that I was doing this, you know?
Right.
I think two or three select people, you know,
right,
that knew.
And as I recall that process of unfolding, I was trying not to even tell myself.
Well, I was certainly not, had no idea where this was going. I was just, had been told by a channeled being that I have consulted from time to time for like 20 years. Because it's always good as a psychic to consult someone else because you're too close to yourself. It was one day, and his name's O'Brien, and he has a, you know, Irish brogue, and he's like, you should try automatic writing. And I'm like, okie dokie. After having pulled this self-made set of divination cards from a book called Ask Your Angels, and I kept getting, you know, a few times something about automatic writing, and then he said it, and I'm like, ooh, okay. And so I was starting meditating at the time.
So we're kind of getting into the answer of the question, and for you, being psychic started with your experience of other people being able to access information, mm-hmm. and then using automatic writing as the way that you were accessing it, which is not the glitzy stuff that people think of as being psychic.
Right, and the guy who wrote the Conversations with God book, I read the first one, and it's the way he portrayed it is he just took pencil in hand, and it just was like flowed. Like, right. Oh, really? Oh, nice for you. A little bit of envy on my part. A little bit of skepticism also. Right. I suppose because my experience was much slower in fits and starts, and, you know, and I finally one day got up the nerve to, after doing this for 3 or 4 years, got up the nerve to tell my sister the atheist. Right. It's like, oh, okay.
Right.
You know,
it really gets interesting when you just look at this stuff as, okay, it's real, and I can make up a story about where it's coming from and what it all is, but I don't know that it matters.
Nah, it's all energy.
Right. You know, that we don't, while we're alive, we don't have a way to truly completely understand that. We just pick the story that we like best about it and go with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people are more clear about some of the way it works and some people are less clear, but do we really, really, really? No, we don't know.
Yeah, at first for me it was like, why me, why me, why me? And then I had to get to, why not me?
Right. Right. And that's a different part of the conversation, perhaps. But, you know, that's the conversation that Noah and Moses and Job and all of the other normal people who suddenly were thrown into miraculous circumstances in the biblical stories had that conversation, and Bill Cosby had a wonderful routine about
Noah.
Oh,
I remember that. Noah.
Yeah, Noah.
What?
Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah.
Right.
Right. And that's kind of the way this stuff starts out, is something's coming through, and you have no way of really knowing what it is, but there it is. And you try and start sorting it out.
And in a way, I feel lucky because it was gifted to me through another source, and it started slowly, so it wasn't like a big surprise. I remember working at an event, and it was a law student walked up, sat down, and said he'd suddenly become a clairaudient.
Mm.
And I said, I bet that scared the crap out of you, didn't it?
Yeah, and that's... And that's part of the journey. And a lot of people reject whatever it is that is their first intense experience, whether it's seeing something or hearing something or however the information comes through. And I look at all this as, since I'm a geek, I look at this, as, you know, kind of radio frequencies. Most people are walking around listening to AM radio. It's very short range. It's staticky. It's hard to tune in. There aren't many stations. And at this point in time, all you get is, you know, right-wing news shows and country music. There isn't much on it. And the rest of the radio frequencies, everything else, FM radio, police band, TV, cell phones, all of that is just a broadband way of accessing more frequencies. So people are walking around and they're only listening to the frequencies that their ears can hear. They're seeing the frequencies that their eyes can see. And, you know, anything else is weird and leave me alone. I don't want to know about it. But all of the senses have a broadband version. So when people are clairvoyant, where they see more, they're seeing a wider range of information than normally comes in the very narrow frequency band of visual light. So, same thing with clairaudient. You know, there've been studies done that show that when somebody is hearing clairaudiently, so they're hearing something that's not from the physical world, it's processed in the brain exactly like it's a sound.
Yeah, and what people think, it's the same kind of experience for everybody. My experience is different than David's, which is different than my dear friend Barbara's, right, which is different than the people I'm going to be doing an event on Saturday. So to say to people, what's it like to be psychic? Well, which one are you talking to? And it can shift over time for people. And I sort of describe it as quantum, you know, that we're all connected through energy. And there's an author by the name of Barbara Brown Taylor who's written a number of books, and she teaches at some seminary, and she describes what she calls the luminous web mm-hmm. that holds everything together. And if you think of us all at a node point, or, you know, interstitially, you know, on this web, and think about, you know, the energy passing along the web threads, and somehow some of us are gifted with the ability to tap into that energy that's moving along that web.
Right. Or tap into it more directly.
More directly. Yeah.
Yeah. In the Hindu Vedas, the description is a net of jewels. It's basically points of light connected by strands of light. And there was a moment in time when I was given a way of seeing certain kinds of issues in buildings that's basically the same thing. And I talked to a few people, including somebody that did a movie where they basically showed what I saw. And, you know, we all talk about it as seeing the grid because it looks like a grid, but mm-hmm. are we seeing exactly the same thing in exactly the same way? No. We're seeing the piece of it that we're able to or need to see in that moment. It just has similar qualities so we can talk about it in a similar language. And every once in a while, I run across somebody who really is seeing something that's basically the same thing I see, which is an extraordinary moment.
Have you seen the movie The Butcher's Wife?
Butcher's Wife.
Demi Moore plays a psychic, and she describes it to one of the other characters as being sort of in the hole of a donut and having her own private movie show. And she turns one way and she sees the past. She turns another way. She sees the future.
I saw it a very long time ago, but yeah, there are so many different ways and different experiences. And for me, the entry point was meditation. And I found a yoga teacher because I had back problems, and this was long enough ago that there wasn't a yoga school on every corner, and found this wonderful gal who was in her 80s and had been teaching dance and yoga all her life. She was extraordinary. And as I got more proficient, she kept saying, "You're not really doing the practice if you're not meditating. This whole thing hinges on meditation. You're ready." And she just kept beating me up until I started meditating. And almost the first time I meditated, it was not very long after I started, I realized when I figured it out that I got thrown into the lower astral plane, which is an area of the universe that is ugly and has some pretty nasty characters. And for whatever reason, I didn't think I was crazy because I could see having that vision and thinking I had just gone nuts. And for whatever reason, I was able to look at it and go, "Oh, this is interesting. And I bet there's somebody who can explain it to me. And this is pretty creepy." And then I had to go looking for a teacher who had that kind of background and those skills. And basically, it was another older woman who said, "Oh, honey, don't let that worry you. We all go through that. That's just the lower astral." And, you know, very matter of fact about it, who started giving me a different kind of training on how to do what I was doing, because I wasn't just meditating. I was having an experience of an altered state and seeing things.
Right. Good. Whereas when I started meditating, I got rushing waterfalls and being on the tops of huge mountains, which is a little scary, and spinning triangles and pyramids and, you know, just all these onrush of images. You know, it's like, oh, okay.
Right, but still, where's this coming from, and overwhelming. So, yeah, it can be very intense, and you need people who have been there before and know what they're talking about and know what they're doing and can lead you through it. Otherwise, it can be really pretty strange.
Right. So, and eventually, after I moved to Massachusetts, I ended up going to a psychic development group for a while. But so it's not all the same. And, you know, there's this myth about some people that if they're not using their talents, and that's why they're ill or whatever. My thought is, well, if that's true, why isn't the coral, you know, the opposite true, that if you're using your talents regularly, how come you still have chronic illness?
Right.
Why
right.
Do I
yeah,
still
there, there's some crazy
and,
story.
You know, it's so like, there's all these myths
so
around
we're gonna,
it.
Right. We're going to need to go to the break shortly, unless we get taller. I want to make sure people know how to find you. What's your website?
It's KatherineSamuelson.com, which is KatherineSamuelson.com.
Fantastic. And is the information about the book and all of that stuff?
Yep, it's all there. Email address, cell phone number. Yep.
Terrific. Not that it's our topic at the moment, but the book is a beautiful book of meditation pictures, and it's wonderful. It's really gorgeous.
Oh, thank you, David.
It's really gorgeous. That was one of the original ways that we connected, was around your book and talking about your book. And, And it's a yummy book. It's really nice.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So my guest tonight is the delightful Catherine Samuelson. And we will be back to talk more about what's this being psychic stuff about here on the Farkas Files. I'm David Franklin Farkas. Don't go nowhere. We're going to have more fun.
Meditation Channel, nonstop meditation music 24 hours a day in the new Empower Radio app. Music to empower your meditation, help you relax, sleep, or provide a calm background while you work. The Empower Meditation Channel is interruption free. Listen now with the Empower Radio app, free in the App Store, or listen online at empower.fm. Soothe your soul, calm your mind. The Empower Meditation Channel.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Now we can make it better now. Come on, can we do it?
Yeah, you know that we can.
We'll rope it up,
cause we know how to jump.
We'll roll it out,
cause we know how to skate.
We'll cut it down,
cause we know what to eat.
We'll swap it out,
we eat healthy stuff.
Can we do it?
Yeah, you know that we can.
Can we do it?
Yeah, you know that we can.
Yeah, well come on.
Today's
come
a good on. Day to grab your kids and hang out with them for an hour. Dance, walk, play a sport, or cook a healthy meal. Because just moving a little and eating better every day can help make you and your child healthier.
Can we do it?
Yeah, you know that we can.
We'll ball it up,
cause we know how to hoop.
We'll mess around,
cause we know how to play.
We'll drop it down,
cause we know how to dance.
We'll veg it up,
veg night and day.
Can we do it?
Search We Can online to find doable tips and activities that you can use every day to keep you and your kids healthy. Remember, that's We Can. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Eat less, eat slower, eat smarter, eat your fruits and veggies, stop eating before you're full, up your fiber, lower your calories, get off the bus early, do some gardening, do jumping jacks, take the stairs, take one, not two, take on a new sport, take a long walk home, walk instead of drive, bend, stretch, reach for the stars, climb the monkey bars, skip the fudge bars. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
An entire station devoted to your personal development. Welcome to Empower Radio.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Catherine Samuelson, and we're talking about what is it like to be psychic? And maybe we should talk about the different, as somebody put it, clairs, like clairaudience, clairvoyance, because there is one for each sense, and most people have no idea that they may be getting information through another sensory, expanded sensory input, and they're not really thinking of it that way. So the most common one is clairsentience, which is feeling it in your body and, you know, picking up the vibes, man.
So I'm not even sure which I'm doing when I'm using the automatic writing. I suppose in some ways it's a clairsentience.
Well, it may be a form of claircognizance.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is clear knowing, and you know the mechanics of it as it comes through the crown chakra, through the top of your head, and it just shows up. And
right.
the difference between a trained psychic and everyone else is most people, when they get that kind of thing, kind of shake it off and go, that was weird, and they keep walking. And somebody who's been trained to pay attention to it says, oh, really? Tell me more. What's this about? And tries to get that stream of information and flowing to get more information instead of going, oh, that was weird. I don't want to know what that was. You know, most people think of clairvoyance, which is clear seeing and has lots of different flavors and variations, and clairaudience, which also has a lot of variants, but they're the least common and the most intrusive and annoying.
I think because they know I'm on duty when I've got a writing instrument in my hand, I don't get a lot of that stuff.
Well, yeah. different people get stuff different ways, but you know, when I'm doing, I talk at dowsing conventions, and dowsing is being psychic for people who are not psychic. It's a way to use a simple biofeedback tool like a pendulum to get answers to yes or no questions, or more, depending on the method you use. And I always say, okay, clear your mind. I don't want you to think about your kitchen or, you know, where the appliances are or what the paint color is or what the flooring is or any of that stuff. And everybody laughs. And I say, okay, you got a really clear image of your kitchen now? Where is it? And that's the place in your consciousness that is your third eye or, you know, whatever the screen is on which you get your psychic information when it's visual. And that's a skill. That's something that people can develop. But there are some people that see things as an overlay on the physical world and can see auras and, entities and all kinds of things as if they were physical aspects of the physical world. Most people don't. If they're getting visual information, it's internal. It's in the mind's eye. And so it becomes a matter of training yourself to know where that is and how to use it.
But also stepping out of your way.
Right. It's always about stepping out of your way.
And out of your belief system.
A lot of people. Say again?
And out of your belief system.
Right.
Because
right.
If you don't, you're going to get the answer you believe in.
Right. Or you're going to take what you're seeing and make up a story about it or block it out. I don't believe in ghosts, you know, and when people say that to me, you don't believe in ghosts, do you? I go, no, I don't believe in ghosts. I've had an experience of ghosts that tells me it's a real phenomenon. There is no belief involved. Belief is hearsay. Belief is somebody else said it and everybody you know says it, so it must be true.
So my uncle by marriage came to me the morning of his funeral in a dream, but mm-hmm. I know it was, you know, but it was real because I felt
right.
the chill. I felt, and it was in that lucid dreaming state. So yeah, it's real.
Right. And there are lots of different levels and variations of even the experience of ghosts. But then as it expands and there are nature spirits of all kinds and, you know, all of the things that we consider fairy tales really existed in the physical world at some point and still exist in the non-physical, and some people see them. So
right.
fairies and elves and dwarves and dragons and all of that stuff, all of those beings have a reality that some people can interact with.
And, you know, when people ask
that gets
me
really
now,
interesting.
When people ask me now what it's like to be psychic, I'm like, it's normal for me. You know, I don't know how to describe it. It's normal. And people think, oh, this is great. It's fantastic. But before the show started, we were talking about how we tend to edit what we tell people what we do. When I still lived in the Boston area, I saw this woman on the street in my local community, and I had known her through the library book club, and we were chatting, and I just sort of slipped and said I was working an event the next day, and she goes, "What?" And I said, "A psychic fair," and she literally started to slowly step away from me, sidle away right from me, and looked at me and said, "So you have special powers?" I'm like, "No." And I, you know, when I decided to sell my condo and then move to Vermont, I interviewed two realtors, and I thought, they should know what I do. And so I told them, and the first realtor I interviewed, she looked at me and said, "So you can read my mind?" And I'm like, and she looked like a little fearful. And I'm like, right, no, it doesn't work that way.
Right. Well, there is so much misinformation. A lot of it from various religious stories, but a lot of it from TV and movies that people think must be either totally true or must be based on reality. And most of it's junk. Every once in a while, there's something that, you know, I look at it and go, yeah, that's how it is, but mostly not. But the people who, you know, as the joke goes, the muggles, the people who don't tune into this stuff, the people that didn't go to Hogwarts, they don't have any way of sorting it out. It's all just not normal and scary.
Right,
and especially if they trip over something like seeing a ghost, and they've always thought either that they didn't exist or it was scary and creepy and dangerous, then how do they integrate that? What did they do with it?
And, you know, and people, it's not as if anybody who's doing this isn't leading a normal human life.
Right.
You don't become fantastically wealthy necessarily. You don't not have family problems. You know, your brother-in-law doesn't stop being a pain in the ass. Or
well, the difference is that many people who do this stuff are empathic and very sensitive and will tend to withdraw from certain circumstances that are painful. You know, they're large crowds or loud noises or certain circumstances, and it just, you know, that's not worth it. I'm going to stay away from that.
No, you know, I don't like big crowds. They make me nervous.
Right, right, right. And especially for people who are empaths, which is another kind of psychic sensitivity where you pick up the emotions of other people in your body.
Or sometimes even their physical pain.
Their physical pain, sometimes their thoughts, their emotions. If you go to a place where people are being emotional and it's all just being flung around all over the place, like what comes to mind is a major sports event. I'm like, oh no. I'm not that interested anyway, but I'm not going where a crowd is intentionally getting themselves pumped up and yelling and screaming. No, it hurts. In the same way that yelling at a little kid will freak them out and literally they feel pain. It's like, no, I don't want to be around that. Could I deal with it? Yeah. Is it worth it? Right. Is it worth the exhaustion? Is it worth the psychic self-defense work that would have to be done to do it and not succumb to it? No, it's not worth it. Which is, you know, why some of us become basically gregarious hermits. Happy to talk to the people that where it's a lot of fun to talk to them, and other people that are not fun to talk to, not so much.
Right, and you can find yourself just moving people out of your life because
right.
It's like, really, I just don't want to put up with that person's energy.
Right, right. Well, that's another example of, you know, what's it like to be psychic? You know, everybody knows the two things that come to mind that will get people's attention on the street. One is that guy in the car with the stereo turned up and the really heavy bass and goes down the street and knocks everybody over with the music from their car.
Right.
And the other is somebody who is having a really good day and is full of not only confidence, but a lot of exuding sexual energy, and every head turns. Doesn't matter whether it's male or female. Everybody goes, what? Who? What's going on here? Everybody picks it up. And those are things that, you know, that's more subtle than the loud music. But everyone has those experiences that immediately pull you, draw you in, get your attention, to shift your consciousness away from what you were paying attention to. And to a certain extent, being especially clairaudient and clairvoyant is like that. You have to learn to not have an interest in what's going on with other people, turn it down and put up some kind of protection for it, so that you're not just getting pulled in all directions because somebody has something going on.
But then the trick is to be aware enough of things that you should be aware of.
Right.
Like, I remember a couple times, if humans still had hackles on the back of their neck, there were just a couple times where, like, it was like the hairs went up on the back of my neck, and I looked over, right, and there was some guy over there ahead of me, and I just, like, zipped across the street. Like, don't want to be anywhere near that guy. You know, there,
right,
was just...
Which is the really good protective part of...
Right. So you can't turn it completely off.
Being more sensitive. But I have a friend in Australia who's probably the most sensitive and clairvoyant person I've ever met. And she has to do a lot of work to walk down the street in a city, so that she's not being knocked around by all the stuff that everybody is putting out. And she has to go on a walkabout in the outback for 3 months, twice a year. She has to get away from electromagnetic frequencies, noise, lots of people. She just has to be out in nature for a while and recharge so that she can come back and do her work.
I don't think it's level for me, but I, you know, still go back and have lunch with a friend in where I was living in Massachusetts every so often. And I just get so happy, right, when I get home to Vermont. And it's not that there aren't electric wires and there aren't, you know, but I look out my study window now and I can see a mountain.
Right.
I look out my back windows and there's a little tiny swath of trees, you know.
Right. And I've got a spot like that too, sitting at my desk, where I look out at two trees that I realize are very sacred to this particular piece of land. I can see hills going off into the distance, and lots of birds, including hawks. And every once in a while, I'll look up and there's a coyote strolling across the property.
Although the interesting thing,
the
I was living in metropolitan Boston area, and I looked, mm-hmm, out my window one day, the apartment I was living in when I first moved there, there's a red fox. Twice I saw, like,
yeah,
12,
there are more
13
fox.
Turkeys, you know. I got dive bombed by a red-tailed hawk. So there, mm-hmm, is some nature there, but it's just not quite the same. I mean, since I've moved here, I've seen a deer just crossing the street outside, right, the, you know, and I was driving somewhere in New Hampshire and saw a bear.
Yep. Crossing the road.
Right. Like, oh, my God, I think that's a black bear.
Yeah, I love driving through, you know, the hills here or up near you and seeing the signs that say moose.
Right. Moose crossing. I have not seen a moose yet. I think they must cross at dawn and dusk. But one day, I was driving home to my condo development here, and I was on the street before turning onto our little dirt road that loops around the buildings. And there was a deer crossing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be able to live in nature, and be able to sit and do your work and look out at a beautiful view. You know, I have a view that's like a nature landscape painting that changes all the time. It's just what's going on today. Oh, today we're inside a snow globe. Yeah.
No, you know, and
actually today it rained all day. But.
Right. And I live, fortunately, within about a 10-minute drive of a park that's right on the Connecticut River.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Which is pretty funny because I'm basically on the Connecticut River, too. I'm about a mile and a half from the Connecticut River.
Probably on the east side and I'm on the west side.
Something like that.
And I swear there's a tree in there where... In this park where I looked at it and I'm like, I don't remember seeing that face in the tree before.
You're starting to see those, huh?
So I actually took a picture of it to text to my friend. Linda's like, yeah, that looks like a tree spirit. I should text mm-hmm. that to you if I had your... I do have your phone number. I could text you the picture of this tree spirit.
Yeah. And they'll show up in the bark. They'll show up in the shadow mm-hmm. play of leaves on the bark. They'll show up in the shadow play of the leaves, in the negative spaces between twigs. I mean, it's if you
this was
just
in this was in the bark. It's a very interesting tree because
from one
side of it looks like this weirdly weird creature, and the other side is like. Oh, there's a face there.
Yep. And, you know, the questions and the amount of different ways that you can learn about it are fascinating because, yeah, there's that face there and it's a way that they're interacting with you in that moment. But what else is there? You know, is there more to see and know about if you could... relax into it and expand your awareness. And then every time it happens, you go through the same thing. What was that? What did I just see? What does this mean?
So I'm waiting for when it's not iced over or it's not mud to go. Do you have a mud season in the area where you are?
Who knows what it's going to be because we had snow last week. So, we had heavy rain today, and we probably will go into mud season. Although
for those
I'm
of you who don't live in a semi-rural area, mud season is when the dirt roads get kind of muddy.
Yeah, I'm on a paved road, so it's more on the property that it gets muddy, but not as bad as when I lived in some of the hill towns, and it was intense. Yeah, and mud season ends, and then there is another season that most people who don't live around here have never heard of, which is construction season.
Well, there's also in Vermont, it's called black fly season.
Right, right.
Which seems to have nothing to do with being a psychic, does it? But that's the way our conversations seem to go.
That's true, but it is about... living in the country because you're sensitive, so we didn't totally stray off topic.
But I chose my semi-rural area of Vermont carefully because I'm within 15 minutes of the Hopkins Center of the Arts if I could get myself to go again. You know, all sorts of interesting cultural things in this area.
Right. Right, and that's one of the wonderful things about the Northeast. There are so many cultural things and so many museums and assorted other things. Even if you're living seemingly in the middle of nowhere, there's stuff everywhere up here. It's wonderful.
Even book readings.
But similarly, have to get yourself out and pay attention and go do it. So,
so one of the things that... this is more of an annoyance that I have with certain reality show psychics that they're on 24/7. You know, people, different psychics have different roles, and it's like, who made up these roles? Like, I went to a book reading, Carolyn Mace, who writes wonderfully, medical intuitive, the whole shot. And she announced to the book reading audience that if you're going to be in this business, you have to be available 24/7. And my immediate thought was, that's not healthy.
Right. Right.
You know, there are some psychics who will not read for family or friends. You know, I don't make a big practice of it, but, you know, I do share information when I'm asked. You know?
Well, and it's, you know, and it's another way of being psychic, being a medical intuitive, being able to mm-hmm. both look at the body and read information from it, but right. just intuitively get detail that can be very important for healing. Mm-hmm. And we also didn't talk about mediums who specifically talk to the spirits of the dead. And that becomes something that people think all psychics are mediums and work in that way. And it's just one particular way of working.
Right. I can find out about the deceased, but it's through information provided by Maya and my clients, collective angels and guides. I rarely communicate right. directly with them. And, you know, people, if you go into this business, people have an expectation of what it should be like. Not everybody reads tarot cards or angel cards. I mean, I changed the description of what I do to channeled angel readings because people, if you just say angel readings, they think I'm reading angel cards, which I don't do.
Right.
You know, and if you don't do exactly what they were looking for, and you could have do a great reading for someone, and this happened to me. She really was looking for tarot reading, but she had a reading with me, and she nodded, and she took lots of notes and said, great, terrific, and then said, oh, she finally persuaded her husband to have a reading, but she didn't want him to have a bad reading as his first reading.
Great.
Great. Then why, I just, put on my lawyer face and said, oh, okay, well, I don't want to force anybody. But I'm thinking, if it was so bad, why did you take copious notes and nod, you know, and agree?
Right. So we could keep doing this, obviously, as we do over lunch for hours, but we're running out of time.
Shucks.
So, yeah, let's tell people your website again.
KatherineSamuelson.com, KATHRYN, Catherine spelled the right way, Samuelson, SAMUELSON.
And the name of the book, if they want to look for it on Amazon?
Or Barnes & Noble, ask for it to be ordered at your local bookstore, Opening the Heart, Meditations on How to Be, and there is a book page on the website.
Fantastic. Catherine, thank you so much for being on the show. This was so much fun.
Thanks, David. I had a good time, too.
My guest tonight has been Catherine Samuelson. Go check out her website. Very, very interesting. And if you got curious about who's this guy, David, and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com. Every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me is there, including a link to schedule a 20-minute free phone conversation, and we can do an assessment of a person, place, business, situation, whatever it happens to be, and see if my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, it's cleverly hiding in plain view at thefarkasfiles.com, and the whole archive is there. We've been doing this for, I don't know if it's been 6 years, but close. So there are hundreds and hundreds of conversations with fascinating people. You can also find us on most of the streaming media, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes podcasts. And probably the best way to listen now is the Empower Radio app, which comes in both appropriate flavors. And that allows you to just choose any of the shows because there's programming 24/7. That's a lot of fascinating stuff on Empower Radio. Click on a show, you'll see the whole archive, and then you can listen to any one of the individual episodes. So things are getting much easier. And there is also now a meditation channel, and 24/7 meditation music. So check that out at empowerradio.com. So thank you so much for hanging out with us. Without you, this would just be two of us hanging out and talking. Until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week. We'll be right back.